Hello and welcome to the Flying Reporter Pilot Briefing Podcast. Today, how a wasp in a cockpit caused a near miss between a glider and a Vans RV8. The risk of a mid-air collision in the UK appears to be four times higher than that in the USA. The Air Accident Investigation Branch is looking into why. And I'll explain in simple terms what changes are in the pipeline for UK pilot licences. Now, flying from airfields in the countryside, as we often do, it's quite common to find that a curious insect has made its way into the aircraft cabin. If you've experienced this yourself, you'll probably know that trying to shoo them out before departure isn't exactly the easiest thing to do, especially if you're nervous around bees and wasps. But of course, it's essential that you do remove any unexpected stowaways because you don't want them flying into your face during takeoff or landing. So imagine having just taken off only to find that one of those pesky wasps or other stinging insect has found its way on board without detection. Well, that's what happened to a pilot of a Vans RV8 that had just departed from Slape Airfield in June last year. The pilot took off at around 11 in the morning on a busy Saturday and had intended to climb to 3,000 feet to avoid the Shawbury ATZ, departing Slape on the downwind leg. After departing downwind, they changed frequency to monitor the Shawbury glider frequency. During their continuing climb out, they discovered an angry wasp in their cockpit, which became, quote, a massive distraction. I can picture it now, buzzing around the pilot's face and ears, just awful. They levelled the aeroplane in order to maintain a safe attitude, but then the wasp stung the pilot on the face, which the pilot said took all of their attention, and I'm not surprised, to be honest. They were trying not to get stung again and were trying to keep the wings level, but as they did so, they saw a glimpse of a glider pass under their left wing. The pilot estimated it was 250 feet below. Now, thankfully, the rest of the flight was uneventful, although I suspect that the wasp got what was coming to it. The glider pilot gave an account of the Airprox to the Airprox board. They said that they were returning to join the circuit after an instructional flight when they saw the RV at their 2 o'clock and at the same level. They pushed forward on the stick to avoid a collision. They said that the RV pilot didn't manoeuvre and they estimated that they only missed each other vertically by 50 feet. The RAF Gliding and Soaring Association conducted its own investigation, during which they said that the RV pilot had acknowledged that they had strayed into the Shawbury ATZ. However, the Airprox board examined radar and GPS data from both aircraft and concluded that the RV had not in fact entered Shawbury's ATZ. It had passed over it at 2,283 feet, clearing it just by 35 feet. The analysis of the data also showed that the aircraft actually missed each other by 160 feet vertically and a tenth of a mile horizontally. Both the glider and the RV pilot were using the same make and model of electronic conspicuity device, which can both transmit and receive ADS-B signals. However, the glider pilot did not have theirs connected to a device that could display traffic. They were using it only to transmit their position, which, according to the Airprox board report, is fairly common in the glider community. Even if the RV pilot's EFB was warning of the presence of the glider, as I suspect it probably was, I guess that the wasp took all of their attention in the cockpit and the information on their EFB was probably missed in the heat of the moment. The Airprox board unanimously agreed that the wasp in the cockpit had presented a very serious distraction. They concluded that the distraction had been so considerable that the RV pilot's initial plan had not been executed as intended. The board commended the glider pilot for their quick reaction to avoid a collision. So, what are my takeaways from this? The RV pilot didn't enter the Shawbury ATZ, but even if they had, it would have been understandable, I think. Aviate first and foremost. And the pilot did exactly the right thing, levelling the wings and maintaining a safe attitude. You don't want to be slow and in a climb and bombing all over the place trying to get rid of this wasp. Once again, though, we're talking about the shortcomings in the whole electronic conspicuity setup. In this case, both aircraft were operating using the same ADS-B device, yet the glider pilot was using it to transmit only. Surely we need to get to a position in this country where we're all using interoperable traffic systems to their fullest extent. Without this, at any time, we're only seeing a fraction of the traffic out there. You can read this AirProx report for yourself. It's on the AAIB website, report number 202-3139. The Flying Reporter Pilot Briefing is sponsored by Flyer Watches. Every Flyer Watch helps someone learn to fly. 20% of the profits from most of their watches fund PPL scholarships administered by reputable organisations like the Honourable Company of Air Pilots and the Air League. I'm currently wearing the Swiss-made Horizon watch, which is scratch-resistant, water-resistant, and offers precise timekeeping. It's jolly nice too. All of the watches come with a 14-day return policy, a 2-year warranty, and free worldwide delivery. Check out the range at flyerwatches.com. Next, we come to a fascinating snapshot of the state of general aviation safety in the UK, and it's a picture that doesn't look at all good. The Air Accident Investigation Branch has published its annual safety review, and it's been looking at the rising rate of fatal accidents. In the 20-year period from 2003 to 2023, there's been a dramatic and sustained fall in the number of hours we fly as GA pilots. It's roughly halved in that time, which is a worrying trend in itself. You'd expect if we were flying fewer hours, the number of fatal accidents would fall as well, but that's not what's been happening. In 2003, roughly 1.5 million hours were flown in GA, and there were 10 fatal accidents. Last year, the number of hours flown had fallen by roughly a half, as I said, down to just around 800,000 hours, yet there were still 10 fatal accidents, the same as 20 years earlier. Apart from the short period during the COVID pandemic, the rate of fatal GA accidents has been steadily increasing. The AAIB has also been looking at the statistics around mid-air collisions in the UK, and that data raises concerns as well. In the same 20-year period from 2003 to 2023, there were 39 collisions involving 78 aircraft, equating to a mid-air collision rate of 0.341 per 100,000 hours of flying. It compared this figure with figures from the NTSB in the US and found that the UK's mid-air collision rate is 4 times higher. The Air Accident Investigation Branch says it doesn't have an explanation for these trends in the GA accident rate and mid-air collision rate. It plans to investigate this further. We do know a fair bit, though, about the causes of fatal accidents. The biggest cause, by far, is loss of control in flight, usually from an incident at low speed near to the ground with the aircraft stalling, leading to an incipient or fully developed spin. There's a CAA safety leaflet on loss of control, which is probably worth reviewing if you haven't looked at it for a while. It states that the most common causes of loss of control in flight are distraction, i.e. from having to slow down or manoeuvre around other aircraft in the circuit, a cockpit warning or other aircraft problem, or perhaps an unexpected air traffic control instruction. Fixation can be another cause too, perhaps by becoming fixated on the runway during a turn to final. Engine failure on takeoff can result in a loss of control if the pilot doesn't select a lower pitch attitude or if they try to turn back. Go-arounds and VFR flight into IMC are other common causes. The Safety Sense leaflet is called Loss of Control, and it's Safety Sense leaflet number 30. Also, Astral Aviation Consulting, who support me with the research for these pilot briefings, have some resources and workshops you can watch on stalls and loss of control. Visit astralaviationconsulting.com and go to the GA Hub. You can also register there for their next free workshop, which is all about defensive flying. I've heard about defensive driving, but what is defensive flying? Find out on the 24th of April, 7:30 in the evening, British summertime. Sign up for that workshop. It's free on the Astral website. The link is in the show notes and the video description. So finally for today, a really quick and easy summary of the proposed UK pilot licensing changes. And my thanks to instructor Matt Lane at Astral Aviation Consulting for going through the lengthy documents from the CAA and breaking it down into easy digestible information for you and me. The CAA has a project to try and simplify GA flight crew licensing and training in the UK. They've now come up with their detailed proposals, but what might it mean for you and I? They're looking at five categories: aeroplanes, including microlights, helicopters, gyroplanes, balloons and gliders. But in this briefing, we're going to focus on the proposals for aeroplanes and just deal with the key changes. For the PPLA, the CAA proposes to stop issuing the UK PPL, which is regulated under the Air Navigation Order, as a standalone license. At the moment, there are two PPLs you can get, the UK PPL and the Part FCL PPL. We'll just have one in future. They want to reduce the qualifying experience required for the issue of a PPL from currently 45 hours flight instruction to 40 hours flight time, and even possibly as low as 35 hours for students training at an ATO. The content, though, of the practical syllabus would not be reduced. But they're proposing some changes to the theoretical knowledge exams. They plan to maintain the content and number of questions for the theoretical knowledge exams, but they're considering combining topics to try and reduce the number of individual papers that a candidate has to take. Next, class ratings. There are going to be some changes to take account of new and emerging technologies like electric aircraft or hybrid propulsion systems. There could be more use made too of differences training, where pilots are qualifying on a different aircraft in future. Another big change is coming for the so-called sub-ICAO licences, the NPPLA and the LAPLA. These will be consolidated, thereby reducing the number of licences that provide similar privileges. There will also be an improved pathway for those pilots wanting to transition to a full PPL. In terms of the maintenance of privileges, they're suggesting a shake-up here too, removing the requirement for flight experience when revalidating the single-engine piston and touring motor glider ratings. They also propose alignment of the recency requirements between the sub-ICAO licence and the PPLA to create a single revalidation pathway. There are a whole host of other interesting proposals too many to list here, but for example, those on the new sub-ICAO licence could be able to obtain an IMC rating. You can't do that at the moment. And there could be some reforms to the theoretical knowledge for the competency-based instrument rating as well. We've barely touched the surface there, but those are the key areas of change. It's a really important piece of work, and the CAA wants your views on it all. Make yourself a brew, sit down and read the proposals and send them your comments. You can find the documents on the CAA Consultation Hub. The consultation closes on the 22nd of May. Well, that concludes this month's Pilot Briefing podcast. Thank you for joining me. The briefings come out on the second Sunday of every month, so please subscribe to the channel or follow the podcast to ensure you don't miss the next update. Until then, fly safely, my friends. Bye for now.